there's certainly something, I think, in long form that still feels right about turning pages. And, you know, I think that that's misunderstood largely. You know, people, you say that to people sometimes and they just assume that you are burying your head in the sand or some sort of curmudgeon. And that's not the case. You know, we're seeing in some of our markets that print is still very viable. That's why we are really circling back to this idea of packaging. You know, everything is packaging, everything is multi-platform, but print isn't necessarily out of the mix for us. And I know that sounds counterintuitive and not what you hear from most people, but that's what we're seeing.
Welcome to It's All Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell, and this week's podcast is a conversation I had with Tiffany Shackelford, an old friend of the podcast. Tiffany's the executive director of the Association of Alternative News Media. She's been a longtime supporter of the podcast, and she's also our digital partner here. And she's on the podcast talking about the upcoming AAN conference in Salt Lake City. That's going to take place July 16th through 18th. It looks like I'm going to be there doing a little presentation about how to podcast and also talking to a lot of people about journalism, the way things are changing, and hopefully getting a few or more than a few pieces of audio for an upcoming podcast. So here's my conversation with Tiffany. So we're talking, as we talked last year, you've got a conference coming up for your membership. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. This is our annual conference that we do every summer. This one moves around for us, and this year we are so excited to be going to Salt Lake City, and it's hosted by the Salt Lake City Weekly, which is our member paper out there.
Yeah, and I saw that the editor or the publisher, I guess, had written a letter last week to reassure everybody that they would be able to imbibe in Salt Lake City.
Yes, as you might imagine, Salt Lake has a bit of a reputation of being a town mostly of just Mormons and mountains. And our group, being journalists, being alternative journalists, does enjoy a cold beverage.
A cold beverage. Well, let's not diss Salt Lake City. My understanding, it is a beautiful city and a welcoming city. So I think it's probably a great venue that a lot of the people in your organization have probably never seen before. So.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous city. The mountain backdrop is breathtaking, to be sure. And it really is. People are very nice, and it's easy to get around. They have a lovely, you know, public transport thing called Trax. And everything is just really easy. It's well designed, I have to tell you.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting pendulum swing that you have from Nashville last year to Salt Lake City this year. Nashville being known for its music and nightlife and honky tonks.
Indeed, it is, you know, a little bit different from the country music honky tonkin capital of the U.S. But, you know, I think nonetheless they will show us a good time.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about what you guys have got planned. So, have you set up any of your keynote speakers yet?
Yeah, we have. And the first person that I just have to mention, because I obviously am very in touch with my inner 11-year-old, is Mark Goodman, one of the original MTV VJs.
Oh, cool.
Is coming and will be there with us and is going to welcome us and do a talk about music journalism and music content, which I'm pretty excited about. You know, maybe it's the Gen Xer in me, but I think he knows more about music than a lot of people that we hear from.
You have a celebrity.
Pretty excited about that. We also have some excellent, really smart people coming to talk, including Eric Bright from Deseret News. He has really done a ton on moving from, you know, successfully moving from print to digital in smart ways. We also have Elizabeth Oster, who is an online news pioneer, coming to speak with us. And then on the long-form journalism side, we have Stephen Fried, who is a sort of a legend among long-form journalists. He's written for Esquire, Rolling Stone. He has several books. He just published another one. So that's pretty exciting. We also have someone with a former mayor of Salt Lake City, a guy by the name of Rocky, which I think is fantastic for a politician's name. And he's going to talk about some of the free speech initiatives they have. Also, kind of one of the things that was really interesting to me is that, you know, with all of the hullabaloo around Indiana's religious, you know, discriminatory possible practices and Religious Freedom Act, Utah actually did it right. You know, they got together with the gay and lesbian leaders in Utah and both sides of the aisle and passed a compromise, an anti-discrimination and Religious Freedom Act. It's really quite successful. So we're dedicating a session to that, which I think will be really fascinating. We also have a ton of great data sessions. One is with Sunlight's new cities data, which is really exciting, and the other is with the Pew Research Center. They've got a ton of state fiscal health and city data, so that's pretty exciting too.
So it seems like you've got a pretty good mix there. I noticed that a lot of what you're talking about is digital stuff. Is that kind of what you're hearing from your membership? They want to hear a lot of that type of information when they go to the conference?
You know, it's always a mix. Certainly our folks, just like everyone else in the media industry, are interested in replacing, you know, print dollars, and like everyone else in the industry, are also finding it not great there, you know, that there's still not a ton of money to replace what was there. So I think it's safe to say monetization streams and diversification of funding is what everybody's looking for. You know, we are talking a lot this year about packaging, successfully packaging, but also, you know, circulation and the digital future and how that's going to look, both from a print point of view as well as a digital one. We also have, you know, a great design track that we haven't had in a few years, and that's dedicated to both print and online design. You know, I think alts are very well known for their covers and their in-your-face kind of print design, and we're celebrating that a little bit, and we definitely have something, you know, for everyone there. In addition, you know, I think we have some sessions that are universal regardless of platform, things like fact-checking without regret, media kits, leadership, turning points, and newspaper valuations. I mean, these are all things that affect all of these folks regardless of the platform of choice, so to speak.
So I wanted to touch on a couple of things. First of all, you mentioned design. I kind of wanted to thank you, because I'm not sure if I actually got around to thanking you for helping me get behind the scenes at the Society of News Design's conference here in D.C., talked to a ton of people, got a bunch of really great interviews for the podcast, which you got a lot of really positive feedback on. And what's great is that conference in particular had a lot of, you know, big thinkers about design, and you know, that excited a lot of people. So I think conferences, you know, certainly what you've sort of described, this is one of the great things about it, is you get all these sort of minds together in one place. And they're the presentations, but they're the conversations beyond that are just as valuable, I think, in many ways.
I think so, and I think, you know, I have to say that my friend and colleague Matt Mansfield, who put together the Society for News Design Conference this year, we worked together on a lot of things, and I think he brought together a thoughtful mix.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think that what we're talking about both at our conference and S&D is that, you know, everything is a little more blended. Everything that we do has to be a little bit more holistic. And I think that's a really important point that across the industry we need to start thinking about. I don't think that everybody should be everything. You know my feelings on that. I don't want everybody to go be a developer or a designer. But you do have to be aware of the different aspects that make media media. And I think it's really important to kind of make sure you're attending to all those different pieces.
So I know you sort of mentioned in passing there about long form. Long form is one of those things that the alt media is really well known for, and so you're gonna have definitely some sessions about that as well.
We are. We've got one of our Saturday kind of keynote session has Stephen Fried, as I mentioned, a reporter named Scott Carrier, who is often has stories on All Things Considered, and I believe This American Life. He's really digging deep into some of the religious issues out in the West, as well as the environmental ones. We have a guy by the name of Jesse Holcomb, who has done some great long-form reporting for Rolling Stone, amongst others, and Tim Elfrink, who his latest claim to fame is the fact that he was the one that brought A-Rod down.
What is before we wrap up about the conference, I want to sort of talk about some general things about AAN. So what have you guys been up to over the last year?
You know, we've really stepped up a lot of our advocacy and lobbying efforts. We've not only with something called the SAVE Act, which we were very much against in its original form, but also a lot of work on Freedom of Information and Freedom of Speech Act. In general, we are also doing some, I think, interesting things for the diversification of our monetization. We are now embarking on an advertising network that's really focused on advocacy organizations and maybe not politicians particularly, but certainly issue-based, you know, because I think from the midterm elections, we all saw pretty clearly that the left guys and the Democrats were not reaching the people that they need to. And certainly in our space, you know, we reach educated, civically-minded people across the country, outside of the Beltway especially. So we think there's an interesting opportunity to partner with some of these advocacy organizations and get them access to a lot of the advertising networks that they don't, and they're not reaching by, you know, the old white guys that watch local TV news. So that's sort of interesting. You know, we're also seeing as you know, I think I always have to predict, unfortunately, we have seen some closures this year. We have seen some sales. The sales isn't necessarily a bad thing. When papers change ownership, I know that it brings it great fear amongst the staff and audience, but we've seen several that are working out quite well. And we've also seen, you know, with some of the really unfortunate race incidents around cities, we've been right at the front. So I've been really proud of our member papers. You know, when Baltimore had some of its issues, we had one of our reporters at the Baltimore City paper get beat up, get thrown in jail. I mean, we are really at the front. These are local issues as far as we're concerned and really important to our community. So I've been really proud to see a lot of that going on. We've had members, you know, inducted into Hall of Fame. The Willamette Week brought down another governor. This is, I think, number two or three for them. You know, so I think our papers, despite it all, have been doing amazing work and continue, you know, in a real way to be the voice of communities. And they are, you know, taking up the slack when dailies are you know, leaving local coverage behind.
Yeah, it's one of the really nice things that I admire about the Alt-Weekly group is that, you know, it's not what people used to think Alt-Weeklies were about, which was, you know, the club and the bar scene and the local music scene, the alternative scene, that quite often that these are the places that are able to, you know, in a very long-form way, look at issues deeply. You know, we had a podcast a few months ago about the Oregon Trail, which, you know, I just sound so fascinating about, you know, investigating, you know, a really deep and multifaceted story, spreading it serially over a number of weeks online. I just great journalism. You can do great journalism in the Alt-Weekly space.
Well, thank you very much for saying that and for recognizing that. I think that's something, you know, people, the media writers are always quick to talk about the demise of everything, forgetting that in, you know, most communities, we are the ones doing this important reporting and figuring out new ways to fund it, which is, you know, I think pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, and yes, funding is an important aspect of all of this. So now I had a really great time in Nashville last year at the conference talking to people. Also, you know, you'd set up some wonderful offsite events for people to take part in. Have you ever got anything planned yet for the after school activities?
The after school activities, we do. Actually, there sounds like what will be an amazing party on Friday night at the museum, the History Museum there, right outside of Salt Lake, and it is gorgeous. The pictures don't really do it justice. It's breathtaking backdrop, and we'll have some, you know, drinks and snacks and maybe a band or two. So we've got a great event there. And we also have, you know, a lovely welcome happy hour at, you know, at one of the local bars with, I think some secret guests that I'm not sure I'm allowed to tell you about. But
okay.
If you check back in on our site, you might get to hear about some exciting bands that stopped by.
Oh, cool. Well, that's that's a cue for that in the business is called a tease.
Did I do that
up.
Correctly?
You did that correctly. Yeah, I don't think I'm actually supposed to point that out. I think I may have ruined the people will realize they're being manipulated. Anywho, where can people find out information about the conference?
Sure. We have two different ways. We have our main site is altweeklies.com, or if you want to go directly to the conference site, that is simply aan2015.org.
And people can still sign up for it, right?
Absolutely. And we are not a group that is, exclusive at all. We want to have non-members come. We throw a great conference. It's full of great events and a lot of interesting great people too. I think it's the perfect size at about 300 or 400, plenty of time to schmooze, big enough to be important and small enough to still get to hang out with the people you want to.
Yeah, and I was really impressed with the lineup of people you had last year. So, when you say that you've got these people lined up this time, it sounds like it's going to be another fun and informative time and something that if somebody can go, that they're going to come away with, not just having a fun time, but actually some thought-provoking things. They'll be able to take some information that they can apply to their job and their paper and their website or whatever. Did you get a few minutes to talk about some other stuff?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I probably have asked you this on another podcast, but how did you get involved in the alt space?
How did I get involved in the alt space?
Yeah.
Well, I was at stateline.org, which was funded by the Pew Research Center originally, and it was an online-only news project run by wonderful, amazing man who unfortunately just recently died, by the name of Ed Fooey, and had been Walter Cronkite's producer and really a pioneer in news formats on the TV side. And he loved to take a chance, and he saw the internet truly as what it is, the great equalizer of news. So I'd kind of grown up, so to speak. I spent most of my early career working for Pew at this and covering state policy and politics in all 50 states. Decidedly not sexy and not rock and roll, but it did give me, I think, an interesting perspective on what's possible. I had successfully left the news business, though, after that, and had gone to consult with a lot of publishers. And the alts came looking for me. They needed someone or wanted someone who, could help them transition to digital and could help think about creative funding. So 4 years later, here I am, still wondering if I'm doing enough or the right things, I think, just like everyone else, and still wondering where the hell that great, that great solution is. But, I'm trying to keep fighting the good fight to find it.
Well, we're all looking for that great solution. I personally don't think it's one solution. I think it's going to be a lot of different things and a lot of different people working hard at trying to figure this out. We'll figure this out. We're smart people. We'll get to the bottom of this sooner or later. The transition from print to digital, I mean, that was something that I heard people talking about with great concern in Nashville last year. And I guess the conversation is still sort of going on.
Well, I think, I think it is. And it's also, it's a little different. So, you and I are here in Washington. We are arguably in one of the media capitals of the world with a lot of money and a lot of resources.
Well, that's personal, but yeah.
Well, yeah. We forget, I think, that outside of the Beltway, people still pick up free print publications. The idea that print is dead or dying is simply not the case in a lot of the communities in which I have alternative papers that I represent. So, it's not quite as cut and dry or simple as, my dear pals over at Vox, getting more readers, getting more this. I mean, we're still putting out a print product every week because there's demand for it. And, there's money to be had in the advertising and, there's beautiful covers to be done. And there's certainly something, I think, in long form that still feels right about turning pages. And, I think that that's misunderstood largely. People you say that to people sometimes, and they just assume that you are burying your head in the sand or some sort of curmudgeon, and that's not the case. You know, we're seeing in some of our markets that print is still very viable. That's why we are really circling back to this idea of packaging. You know, everything is packaging, everything is multi-platform, but print isn't necessarily out of the mix for us. And I know that sounds counterintuitive and not what you hear from most people, but that's what we're seeing.
Well, the one presentation I was at last year, actually, that I actually was involved in introducing the person, Penny Muse Abernathy from the University of North Carolina, and her presentation was pretty much about this sort of business model thing that, you know, and she sort of laid it out that newspapers needed to convert print nickels into digital nickels. And at the same time, there were people who were in the audience, there were people who came up afterwards who were, you know, I'm still making money in my, you know, in my weekly paper, you know, how can I turn away from that? And, you know, she was very adamant about, well, this is something a transition you're going to need to figure out because, you know, from her point of view, the trends were that the money was going to be on digital. Now, it's not there yet. It's still a huge mountain to climb to sort of make that transition. But, you know, it was very much a lively part of the discussion that was at that conference last year, I thought.
That's a really good point. And I think that's, you know, actually a little bit that sort of plays to what I'm saying, and that I think that people understand that they have to transition, and no one's denying that. But at the same time, going just and saying, whatever, screw you, print, is not really the answer either. You know, it's been told to people in the news business quite a bit, but I'm not so sure that was completely short-sighted. I think, you know, if we were looking at this from a pure business point of view, and if we were a room of MBAs observing this, we would talk about succession and transition planning. We wouldn't talk about just dropping everything and going over here, particularly when the percentages and dollars just don't add up. I mean, if you really take it as just, let's take it a part of a case study. You know, I think there's this, you know, this problem in the media business that we get all worked up. We don't really know what the problem is because we don't stop enough and actually investigate our own industry enough, what's really happening, what have really the trends been on, what has the money been spent on strategically and over the years, where have we spent it, what have we been doing. We get in an echo chamber, you know, we hear a couple of voices and freak out some more and talk it to death in circles. But, you know, I said this about nonprofits before, and I've said it about the media business. We need to really apply it like it's a business problem, because that's what it is. And we really need to kind of take a look and take a step back. You know, I understand that it was very trendy, and I was guilty of this too for a few years, of saying, we have to throw it up against the wall and see what sticks. And it was this sort of desperation of hosing shit on the wall to see what would come out. And that was fine for a little while there, because just to get the attitude of entrepreneur thinking and really just the idea of experimenting, and that was important. But I think we've come long enough away from that that we need to say, okay, do we have a plan? What are our assumptions and what are our projections here, and how can we go from here to there while still standing, while still making money? Because none of us are in a position that we can just stop everything and go, okay, we're going to pivot. You know, we have to pivot while pulling an entire industry and an entire, you know, business in a lot of cases. So, you know, I certainly have come full circle on my thinking around all of this in the last few years, just as an observer and support unit for media.
Yeah, no, I'm with you right there. I mean, I think we all had our giddy moment. We're all like, let's tear down the castles and let's you know, build anew. But that's not that easy, especially when it's people's, you know, lives and jobs that are sort of in the mix here, that, you know, you can't just flush a whole generation or two generation of journalists down the toilet and then just build a new brand new industry. I mean, this is a transition. It's so crazy that, you know, once you realize that it is a transition, that we may not know, you know, what the end result is, what the end formula is, if there's one formula, that we're just going to have to muscle through this. That's scary to some people. I think it's scary to a lot of people. I was at an award ceremony a couple of weekends ago, and I was talking to a woman from the AP, and she was like, you know, this is really scary. And she'd been, you know, she'd been in journalism for, you know, a few decades. And, you know, she talked about the state of her journal, you know, her newsroom and how different it was and how concerned people were about, you know, not only just covering how to cover the news, but, you know, just how to keep your newsroom viable in this changing environment. I mean, she recognized, yeah, on the one hand, it's exciting, but on the other, it's also very scary.
I think so. And I think also, you know, I think this is true on both sides of the business as well. I think there was this assumption, and again, I want to say I was guilty of this too, that you could just say to sales and marketing and business people, okay, now you need to shift and you need to sell all these other things, even though you grew up selling this one kind of thing. And I remember saying, well, if you can sell, you can sell, you can sell, right? Whether it's shoes or it's houses or it's whatever. But, you know, I used to sell shoes at Nordstrom, and I was pretty successful at that. And then I was trying to sell a rental house that my husband and I had, and it nearly killed me and wiped us out because we couldn't sell that sucker. And I just think that there's this sort of, I think for those of us who are not right there, we want to say, well, what? You can, you know, just figure it out. Learn to sell it. You don't have to know the back end. You don't have to, you know these things. But I'm not sure it's as simple as all that. And again, I guess I'm using this as a confession this morning, Michael, because I think I was guilty of, you know, just dismissing how hard it might be to learn new platforms in order to sell them or in order to market to them as well. So, I mean, I think that's the other piece of this, is that it's total disruption. If it was disruption in one side of the house or one piece of a business, it's one thing, but it's not.
Yeah, well, it's good that you're confessing because once you realize that, then we can begin the road to recovery.
Okay.
And we can move on, and you can grow as a person in acceptance of yourself. No, I hear everything that you're saying here, and yes, and we need to get to the other end of this. But again, this is the problem of having a newsroom that's separate from your business side. You know, that our perception of what ad sales is very different than ad salesman's perception of what the newsroom is. And we may see all this great innovation and new storytelling techniques, but, you know, how do you sell that to, you know, a furniture store that has a limited budget and they want to make sure that they invest their money in the proper place to reach the people that they want to reach? And if you don't have the answers for them, they're not going to give you money. So you're absolutely right. It's a total disruption.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and with that too, I think what's sort of fascinating is, not to get on a soapbox, oh, but I will. you know, as journalists, why is this a new concept, you know, understanding our own business?
I don't know. And it's been boggling my mind the last 2 years I've been doing this podcast, because it keeps coming up that it was the church and state thing that we bought into, I think. And this is the way our structure is. It's church and state. We can't think about the business side, because then that tarnishes our journalism. But to be honest, you could always argue that having ads in our newspapers was somehow tarnishing our journalism, because, well, you know, we all know of big newspapers that cover, you know, whatever the annual flower show, because, you know, maybe there's some sort of sponsorship in there, or maybe there's some sort of revenue stream in there. I mean, at the same time, we're one of the big issues in digital journalism right now is they're trying this whole idea of branded content, you know, that content that readers will enjoy and find informative, but is actually paid for in some way by a sponsor. So, you know, I don't know, Tiffany, why are we having this problem? Why have we always had this problem?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I agree with you. And I think also, though, when I was covering states, if I had met a governor or a staff or anybody that didn't know the business of his business, of where the money was going and where the money was coming from, I would have crucified him, right?
Right.
So the church and state thing is an interesting idea, yes, but I think it's a little bit of a.
Well, and it's interesting that it's church and state, and we know that comes from, you know, the perception of the, you know, the way the U.S. government is set up is that we have a separation of church and state. But once you apply it to to the newsroom, suddenly the newsroom is a church. And, you know, that has certain, you know, certain connotations of, you know, a hierarchy and a structure that's sort of grand. And we sort of invest it with all of these other emotions and feelings and thoughts about, you know, the propriety of our, of what's right. And we mold that in with our ethics. And then we create this structure that just sort of falls apart when the business side of it begins to crumble. So I don't know. We're in this fix because we put ourselves in this fix to a certain degree, I think.
Absolutely. I think so. And I, you know, I think maybe there's something about you know, that something about the past year that's made us all a little bit more reflective or honest. But I think it's important to kind of have this moment and say, you know, a lot of the tenets and principles that we were as journalists are important, most of them. But maybe it's time that we rethink some of them. You know, with all respect to our mentors and those that came, you know, and helped and did amazing things before us, but, you know, maybe the boys on the bus weren't doing everything right.
Right.
You know, and I don't think it's sacrilege anymore to say that.
No.
Like I once did.
No, especially when you say it as the term is boys on the bus, because that opens up a whole nother can of worms. Yeah, now let's disrupt this whole thing. It's funny, you know, we talk about the church and state thing. I remember being at an event when I was an editor at the Connection newspapers in Northern Virginia, and this politician was at a table next to the one that I was at, and I started talking to them, and he said, "Well, I don't want to talk to you guys." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he says, "Well, you're prejudiced. You've already set up, you know, you write from a particular slant." And I said, "No, our editorial policy is, you know, interview everybody. We interview all the candidates." And that was one of the things that we were sort of proud of. But he says, "No, no, no." And he picks up a copy of the paper and he says, "Look, you have advertising in here. Your advertising, you know, once you start taking advertising, that colors the way your content is viewed." And I was like, you know, "Well, no, I disagree with you, because we kept our newsroom separate from that. That has no influence on it." And then he says, "Well, but, you know, you should be a nonprofit." And I says, "Well, but, you know, part of what newspapers do," and I think, you know, news, they still do, and they still should in a way, is we support local business. And that doesn't mean that, you know, local business controls our editorial content. But, you know, that's part of our mission as well, is that we need to promote these, you know, our advertisers in some way. So, you know, understanding what that the role of that is in the way we cover the news and the way that we keep our news source viable, I think is profoundly important moving forward. And, you know, it always was.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think so. But I just think, you know, like everything else, what I'm advocating for these days is just more honesty with ourselves, with our audience, and more transparency.
Yeah.
You know, I think another thing that I think would be really interesting is if every newspaper in America opened up their books, at least internally. You know, reporters should be able to see kind of where the, I mean, I don't mean, you know, on
Salaries.
certainly not, but they could see that amount total, or they could see, you know, the percentages. I think that those are the kinds of things that give you a full picture. And in the same way that I was talking about a holistic look of monetization and generally the news business, I think that, you know, I think that's part of it. I think, you know, a little bit more transparency towards where we are is really a good thing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Well, sort of to wrap this up, I wanted you to sort of brag on, and I think you've done it a little bit, of some of the things that the alt weeklies have been doing in the last year. I know you mentioned the stuff in Baltimore, which I thought was pretty incredible, their coverage of what I guess would be called riots, and that whole story. Are there any other big stories of the last year that you thought that you're particularly proud to have seen come across the alt weeklies website?
You mentioned Chris Ferrone's Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
He is with the weekly Dig Boston. And I think actually Chris Ferrone's work in general is fantastic. I mean, he is single-handedly bringing corrupt politicians down to their knees. I'll also point out that alt weeklies across North America raised over $6 million for community nonprofits. Not bad.
No.
And we also, you know, I think, you know, have had some amazing stories. I mentioned Tim L. Frank and the A-Rod story, which was going on last year a little bit. We also had Arkansas Times launch an amazing crowdfunding campaign for their investigations. And what we found out is that the folks in Arkansas are glad to pay for that level of journalism, which is great. I also, I think, mentioned to you the Willamette Week takes down the governor, which was I think fairly impressive. The Coast in Halifax was a big winner. The Canadian Journalism Foundation. So we've had a lot of awards this year. Willamette Week won the IRE medal, and also it wasn't just Baltimore. You know, the guys in Riverfront Times out of St. Louis were really doing, I think, amazing job on the ground during some of the Ferguson situations. And, you know, a lot of our papers are turning 20, 30, 40, and 50 years old this year. So that's sort of interesting as well. You know, we're not just the young punk on the street anymore, which is, I think, pretty interesting.
No, you're adults now. They have to go out and get jobs. They have to support themselves. No, they can't. No, they're going to go out and change the world as they continue to do. As always, Tiffany, this has been a great conversation. Let's actually, you know, we didn't talk about the specifics. It's the conference is in is it the 16th through the 18th of July?
Yeah, it's July 16th through the 18th in Salt Lake City. You can still register. We still have a few openings for exhibitors and sponsors and speakers. So if anybody out there is listening and got pretty excited, give me a call.
Okay.
Love to have you.
Okay, cool. Well, that's great. And thanks for your ongoing support of the podcast. Thanks for coming in and talking about this. So looking forward to the big do in St. Louis, in Salt Lake City. Take care.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find out more about us and download past episodes at itsalljournalism.com. You can also download episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Follow us on Twitter at All Journalism. It's All Journalism is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.